The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to the latest shift of the Ice Time podcast here at buffalonews.com. I'm news sports columnist Mike Harrington, joined by Sabres beat reporter Rachel Lindsay. In the midst of a crazy stretch for the Buffalo Sabres, where the season has been unbelievably transformed to the point where now it's not just about a wild card, it's about potentially winning the Atlantic Division, certainly finishing in that top three. And Rachel, as we look at this stretch here, really a lot of it is about the goaltending of Alex Lyon and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. But let's start first of all with Luukkonen. As we learned on Thursday prior to the game against the Los Angeles Kings, what's your thought on what Lindy Ruff had to say about where Luukkonen stands here going into the rest of the season prior to the Olympic break?
I look at the big picture at the three-goalie problem, as I termed it earlier this year, with Alex Lyon, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and Colton Ellis fighting for time in the net. It has now turned into this three-goalie solution. And this time I use the term very strongly because Lindy told us Thursday morning UPL's out for at least another week, if not longer, with that lower body injury. He sustained after trying to make a save against Austin Matthews in Toronto earlier this week. You know, Alex Lyon is again the guy, and Alex Lyon is a player who has staked his career on being able to come off the bench, be reliable, be ready, and help teams win meaningful games. You look at Florida in 2023, as you and I have talked about. If it wasn't for Alex Lyon, we wouldn't be talking about the two-time Florida Panthers as Stanley Cup champions. He started the run for them, even though they lost in 2023. He's done it for Buffalo this season. He came in off the bench in Edmonton when Colton Ellis sustained the concussion. The spotter had taken him out in Edmonton the end of the first period. The Sabres come back to win in overtime, start that 10-game run. Alex Lyon's also won an AHL championship. And right now, he's going for the franchise records of 10 consecutive wins by a goalie. And we've discussed this, and you think about all the great goalies the Sabres have had. Dominic Hasek, Ryan Miller, Grant Fuhr, Don Edwards, Tom Barrasso. And it's Alex Lyon who's approaching the records books. Alex Lyon is making his money right now. This ends up being a very smart signing by former Buffalo Sabres GM Kevin Adams. You ever think we'd be saying that either?
We've said that a few times, strangely enough, about Kevin Adams' moves in building this team. The dynamic with Luukkonen strikes me as very interesting because, of course, he's on the Olympic team for Finland. Mm-hmm. And Sabres GM Jarmo Kekäläinen is one of the advisors of the Finnish Olympic team, the leadership group there. So Kekäläinen's going to have a two-pronged approach looking at Luukkonen going forward here to help the Olympic team and to help the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, where do you think the Sabres have to approach this situation with Luukkonen now coming up in the next week or two?
Approach it with caution. I mean, UPL is still number one on the old depth chart, as Jim Harbaugh used to call it. But I would say if I am the Sabres, that is your multi-million dollar investment. This job was his to lose. He's had injury problems before this season. You know, he missed training camp, missed the bulk of the first month of the season because of injuries, especially if the Sabres want to prepare for making the playoffs. As we said earlier, they began the morning, what, third in the Atlantic Division in striking distance of Atlantic Division number one in the division. They have to look at him long term. They got to rest him. They have to make sure UPL is healthy after the Olympic break as well too. I would say don't mess with this. Alex Lyon has proven himself. Colton Ellis can step in at a pinch as well.
Colton Ellis has 7 wins so far this season. And here's the other note on the goalie situation. We've talked all year about, well, they're taking up a roster spot with 3 goalies. That's not an issue anymore after the trade deadline in March. Once the trade deadline comes, you don't have to have a 23-man roster. You just have to have a cap-compliant roster. So if they want to fit 3 goalies in, Ellis is only making $775,000 on the cap. They can keep the 3 goalies. At this point, I think you're looking at a 3-goalie outlook for the rest of the season, and they'll figure out what they're going to do in the offseason here going forward. But you're right, at this point, with so many injuries going back and forth, and this is something I asked Ruff about, it's amazing to me. Normally, a goalie injury can crush a team. And in this case, they've had a multiple run, a circular string of goalie injuries, and one guy just picks up the next guy. It's really been a remarkable situation for this club. We haven't seen this in a long time since the Sabres had Miller and Marty Baron and Mika Noronen way back in the early 2000s.
Which was well before my time. But again, of all people, who was looking like the smartest for coming up with this three-goalie arrangement, picking up, you know, Colton Ellis off the waiver wire at Lindy Ruff's advice. And remember Lindy saying this earlier. He had scouted Colton Ellis. Said, hey, this might be a possibility. Kevin Adams. And then it kept him. And then, you know, likely someone there, whether it was Lindy, Kevin Adams, maybe Yarmo picked it up, there was a forecast, there was a possibility one goalie's going to get hurt. And it's good for the roster in a way. I also think it's a little cumbersome for the roster, too, when you look at the goaltending depth in this organization. Devin Levi in Rochester. Scott Ratzlaff's getting time in Rochester. Tobias Leinen is another guy they banked on. But I go back to Alex Lyon. We may not be in this position to discuss the Sabres in a playoff position if it wasn't for Alex Lyon doing his job and coming off the bench. You know, even though he missed, you know, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks after getting injured in St. Louis,
right,
he still put himself in the running for a franchise record of, you know, 10 straight wins by a goaltender. And ahead of Thursday's game against the Kings, he has helped the Sabres be third in the Atlantic Division with 65 points, ahead of Montreal, the first wildcard team, with also 65 points. And that also shows you right now how much more valuable those Atlantic Division games are. We have another one coming up this weekend against Montreal.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
You look at Alex Lyon's value, but really one of the big things about the Sabres this year is their star players have played like stars.
Mm-hmm.
Tuck, Thompson, Samuelson's growth, Byram. And we saw in Toronto Tuesday night, you want to talk about a star player playing like a star. Rasmus Dahlin, number one overall pick in 2018, has been playing like a number one overall pick for multiple seasons now. But Tuesday night was one of the great nights of Rasmus Dahlin's career. You could tell how much he enjoyed it. A five-point night in Scotiabank Arena, a hat trick, his first career hat trick in the 7-4 win against the Leafs. And just reflect for me a little bit, Rachel, on how significant a night that was for Rasmus Dahlin, both in light of his personal situation that has become very public this year and in the way he is really starting to take charge of this club.
You know, the first, it felt like that whole game and Rasmus Dahlin's play was a validation of what the Sabres are and can be for the remainder of the season. And two, dare I say it, I believe this was the defined start of a Norris Trophy campaign for Rasmus Dahlin. He was sixth in Norris voting last season. I think it's fair, especially after this game, especially after the way Rasmus Dahlin has played as late, I think it's fair to put him in the same category as the Zach Werenskis and Quinn Hughes of the world. I mean, for the record, my preseason pick for the Norris was Jacob Slavin from Carolina. I was wrong. But, you know, you look at some of the scoring right now, you know, Dahlin's just on a tear. He's even driving the net against Toronto. Yeah. You don't
what was he
Rasmus
doing up there?
Do that. I said, that's Bo and Byram or Jason Zucker does this. Bo and Byram's the guy. I call it the Byram when he drives the net. I also think this was kind of, going back to Rasmus Dahlin's personal situation, a little context for our audience. His fiance Carolina underwent a heart transplant over the summer. I mean, she could have lost her life. She's still overseas. And then within the last week, she revealed on a social media post that she had lost a baby, and the pregnancy and the miscarriage basically were what alerted her to her heart condition and basically started the ball rolling on the fact that she needed a heart transplant. And it's a near tragedy. I my heart goes out to Rasmus Dahlin and Carolina, because that is something unimaginable that any adult, any parent, any family should have to go to. And if I can go into a little bit of inside baseball, I remember you and I discussed it when we saw Carolina's initial social media post and said, should we write about this? And that's hard. It's hard to intrude on grief. But at the same time, after Rasmus Dahlin just had this remarkable game, another reporter asked about what's been going on with him. He handled the answer very classily, very smartly, you know, very perfunctly. And it was, okay, let's put this in context here. Everything this guy has gone through, and he is still succeeding on the highest level right now. He's just getting stronger. And I had asked Lindy this morning, you know, What is it? Why has Rasmus Dahlin been getting stronger? And why has his game been getting more fortified? And he says it starts with his skating. He feels good about where his body's at, where his energy level has been. You know, he's better patient-wise. Even though he took some time out, he has been consistently playing, you know, and consistently involved. And Lindy said, I think this is his longest stretch, which he's doing that. And Lindy said, continued, I think he's mentally got himself into a great place and physically probably the best year he's been, you know, year he's been at as well. Everything's coming together for Rasmus Dahlin. You know, I remember even thinking at the beginning of the season, gosh, he looks so sullen. You start putting it in context. And I said, okay, I get it. This guy's dealing with a lot. But as he's seeing Carolina improve, as he's seeing his own game improve, he's seeing the contributions he's making to the team, all of it's coming together. There's kind of this balance there, and it really gives him room to grow, room to shine.
And we saw this when he came back in Detroit in November. Really one of the seminal moments of the season, that victory when they were down 4-1 and won in overtime, was the day Rasmus Dahlin returned to the club after he had taken a leave of absence to go see her in Sweden. And you could tell when he came back how mentally refreshed he was, how much better he felt, that everything was taken care of. They had predetermined medical appointments to attend to that week, and everything came back pretty well. And he has been much better, in a much better mental place since then. And obviously, his physical performance on the ice has been spectacular. There was no shortage of media, of course, in Toronto the other night. And some of those guys who I've known a long time could not say enough about, A, how Rasmus Dahlin performed on the ice, and B, how he performed in the dressing room after the game in terms of the maturity he showed in dealing with his personal situation.
He was a captain in Toronto. That was probably in my first year on the beat. That was, for lack of a better term, the most captainy I had seen the captain this year. And it's just, okay, Rasmus Dahlin only has upwards to go. And I feel like as he goes, the Sabres are going to go as well. But I really believe we got to mention him in the Norris Trophy candidacy as well. Again, he's got 42 points, 11 goals, 31 assists. The only thing that's holding me back right now, he's a -7. I'm looking at Cale Makar, who's, you know, 15 goals, 41 assists. He's a +28. Zach Werenski, you know, Cale Makar is otherworldly in some ways.
The Avalanche plus minus numbers are so at a different level.
It's the Avalanche and everybody else. Yeah. You know, Zach Werenski on a team that, on the Blue Jackets, have made a coaching change. They're kind of mired in the basement. He's 19 goals, you know, +4. Edmonton's Evan Bouchard, I think he's up there with Cale Makar among the best offensive playmaking defensemen in NHL. He was one of my votes for the Stanley Cup Finals unsung hero. He's got 14 goals, 42 assists. He's a +11. And we're going to see another Norris Trophy candidate this weekend in Lane Hutson when Montreal comes to town. The Calder Trophy. He was Calder Trophy winner last season, right?
And you want a little side note here on some of these guys you're talking about. Here's my sidelight in this group.
Okay.
Evan Bouchard is a defensive liability.
He is a bad
defenseman. He's an interesting guy to follow because he's so talented offensively, but people slag on him so much in Edmonton. I can't see Evan Bouchard pushing into the Norris discussion. He's just not good enough defensively. You cannot be a terrible defenseman, and there are too many, you know, Evan Bouchard plays. They almost are nouns in Edmonton, so to speak. Dahlin,
he's Boucharding. So
yeah, Dahlin is captainly, like you said, and Bouchard is Boucharding. So I like all the guys you've talked about there. I would take Evan Bouchard out of that list simply because he's just not a two-way defenseman.
But going back, the only thing that's holding me back with Dahlin is that plus-minus. And granted, you know, you have to look at it. That's another one. You have to look at those sample sizes where those pluses and minus came as well. And we still have two months
There's
left.
30 games
season,
left.
2.5 months.
Yeah,
things can a lot can change. Maybe Evan Bouchard will try to get good defensively over the next 30 minutes. Maybe the Olympic break will inspire him a little bit. I don't know, but and Lane Hutson, there's another guy you know to do that as well. And Montreal coming to town this week, and can we go into what you know with schedule? We'll go into that eventually as well. Too, that's gonna be one of their topics. But Mike, after we've talked about the potential Rasmus Dahlin Norris Trophy candidacy, I'm gonna throw this over to you because. The Sabres last week hinted at and announced a signing of a player right after I was getting off the treadmill last week in Montreal. And it wasn't the signing that everyone anticipated. Josh Doan. Sabres made a 7-year commitment to the young forward, 6.95 average annual value, million average annual value, with a very unique salary structure bonus in the first 2 years and a pretty nice no trade clause. But the question, Mike, it becomes is, what does this mean for Alex Tuch's future in Buffalo? You know, he becomes an unrestricted free agent July 1st, and you've reported on this as well. What does signing Josh Jones, prioritizing him by Yarmo, what does that mean for Alex Tuch?
Well, the first thing we're seeing is this team is winning, and that's why negotiations with Alex Tuch and his agent kind of went on the back burner in the first place, because they wanted to concentrate on winning hockey games when the team was at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. So now they're doing that. Now Alex Tuch can see what the potential is for this club going forward. And I think the other thing we see now is the core is building up here. Josh Doan is now a member of the core of this club for 7 years, a guy who grew up in the hockey world, whose father was a tremendous player in Arizona. Certainly he has fit seamlessly into this dressing room. They got him at a good number. Alex Tuch wants to be paid. You know, let's see how much he wants to stick around with this group. I don't know that I could pay Alex Tuch $11.5 million. Could I pay him more than Rasmus Dahlin? I don't think so, but I could at least double his salary from 4.75 to 9.5 to 10. You know, if he wants it to start in the 10 range like rumored, you know, I think they'll have to think about it. Here's the issue, Rachel, is that a 7-year deal could take Alex Tuch to 37, 38 years old. But what we saw with Josh Doan was a structure that included signing bonuses, $3.5 million for a couple years. Terry Pegula has stayed away from signing bonuses. Signing bonuses are the thing that most players want now. They want that money up front. They want it buyout proof. They want it lockout proof. I hate even bringing that up, but down the road, if that were to happen, you get your money if you have it in signing bonuses. There are guys like McDavid and Draisaitl getting paid $1 million a year in salary. Most of their contracts are in signing bonuses. It's something the Sabres have not done. Josh Doan right now, as a matter of fact, is the only player on this club who has signing bonuses in his contract for more than 1 year. He will get a signing bonus next year and the year after at $3.5 million. So Terry Pegula at least is starting to see the light on that. I think Jarmo Kekalainen is involved in that, saying we are going to have to do this. And as Alex Tuch is an older player, a large amount of his salary of any prospective deal here is probably going to have to be paid in signing bonuses. So the Sabres are going to have to step out in a different way than they have done in the recent past and think about how they're going to structure Alex Tuch's contract. And here's the other point here. You know, and Alex Tuch is on all these trade boards and all TSN and this website and that website. You know what? They're trying to win this year. And Alex Tuch's been here since 2021. And if you play him out and he leaves in free agency, so be it. Let's not forget here, Jarmo Kekalainen did that in Columbus in 2019 with Artemi Panarin, with Sergei Bobrovsky. He beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round of the playoffs. You know, he got to the second round. I can't even imagine, frankly, this club in the playoffs this year without Alex Tuch on the ice on this team.
And you bring up a very good point. I was thinking about that last night. I was thinking, Yarmo's done this before in Columbus, like you said. You know, when he went for playoffs or bust, let's see how far I can go. He kept Sergei Bobrovsky after the deadline. He kept Artemi Panarin at the deadline. Made some very tough decisions and said, "You can help us now, but when it becomes a free agent," he had some very honest conversations, particularly with Sergei Bobrovsky. It was one of the names that was told me as well, too. Now, also, Mike, refresh my memory. Signing bonuses, do they count against the salary cap?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are in the pocket of the players ahead of time, which
so
is
it's
a
like
big deal.
It's an immediate bonus as opposed to, oh, we'll pay your salary every week.
Here's the other thing to me. Why is this such a crime if you have a guy leave in free agency for nothing if you're a winning team? You know, we understand there's a lot of PTSD in this market because of what happened 20 years ago with Briere and Drury. I get it. It was embarrassing. It was bad. It was one of the first times it had happened in the NHL. Well, you know what? Guys walk in free agency all the time in baseball, in the NFL. We just saw it in Toronto. Bo Bichette walked in free agency, just signed with the New York Mets. Do you think the Blue Jays take the Dodgers to Game 7 of the World Series without Bo Bichette in the lineup? He just went deep in Game 7 of the World Series. So they lost him. So what? Are you going to try to win this season or not? If Alex Tuch you can't get a deal with him. You're going to trade Alex Tuck in March for picks and prospects? Are you kidding me? What world are we living in? To me, Alex Tuck has to finish it out this year. And then you can talk to him again in May or June or whenever the season's over. You'll still have his rights. He's a free agent July 1st, and so be it. I can't imagine what it would do to this locker room if you traded Alex Tuck at the deadline this year with where this team is going.
And he's part of the leadership group for the Sabres. He's kind of like the team, you know, social director. It was interesting. I was listening to Elliot Friedman's podcast, and they talked with Josh Doan earlier this week, and Alex Tuck said something. Josh Doan said something like, "Oh yeah, Alex Tuck said to me, well, you know, we're gonna have the signing dinner next year," and it was kind of like, "Oh, is Alex Tuck gonna come back? You know, what?" And he's like, "No, not that." But and here's another question I have for you about Alex Tuck. You know, will the Sabres be able to meet his salary, his desired salary, one with the new salary cap going up, you know, as of next year? And besides Alex Tuck, after you get him, after you sign him, if the Sabres do sign him, who else do you prioritize? We got Kesselring's going to be an RFA. I think Benson's an RFA, and Peyton Krebs is an RFA. And then Jordan Greenway's another one they have to make a decision on as well.
They'll figure it out. They have a problem with Skinner's money going up next year to $6.4 million on his buyout, but that's a one-year thing. They'll figure it out. You know, Kesselring, you're not paying big money like you thought you might have in this last summer when you got him. You don't have to pay him now. You can give him another one-year deal. You can figure out money for Krebs and Benson. You can make a trade. You got to see if Greenway's even going to be on the club next year, if he's going to be healthy. That would be a $4 million saving. So there are things they can do here. I am not worried about the Sabres getting under the cap signing Alex Tuck. I don't think Alex Tuck is signing for $7 million, obviously. And I don't think he's signing for 11 or 11 and a half either. I think there is going to be a meeting of the minds here now that this club shows it can win and has tremendous potential going forward. I'm still confident they're going to figure that out.
Well, that's why assistant general manager Josh Flynn is going to have his work cut out for him once they, you know, get in the offseason and have to figure out all these hours. And that's why Yarbrough brought him in. Josh Flynn is a sap calorie savant, you know, salary cap savant, I should say. Got it wrong. But they'll get it figured out. I think it's just a matter of people who are watching this Alex Tuck situation have got to be patient. I think patience is the biggest thing, and understand the strategy the Sabres and Jaromir Kekäläinen will take regarding not just him, but other free agents. All right, Mike, we're going to look into the final games for the Sabres going into the Olympic break. They've got Montreal on Saturday as well. That's kind of the one I've got circled on my calendar. The first of three Atlantic Division games, including two on the road, one at Florida, one at Tampa Bay. And think about it, the Sabres haven't gone down to Florida yet. And they're going down at the perfect time, given the weather here in the Buffalo area. And the Sabres also haven't played Tampa yet. They've also got to host Sidney Crosby and company a week from Thursday, their last home game before the Olympic break. But let's talk about these three games coming up against Montreal, Florida, and Tampa Bay, ones that have added value because they are Atlantic Division games.
Yeah, you look at Montreal, this is going to be three games in 19 days against the Habs. The Sabres have won the first two. There's a good hate building between these two clubs. Mm-hmm. Elliot Friedman noticed it on his podcast, how dicey some of the action was in the game at Bell Center last week. And it's a little bit reminiscent of the 70s and 90s with the Sabres and Montreal building up some hate here. So that's pretty good. You know, I still look at this whole situation as between Buffalo and Tampa in this division. You're talking four meetings in the last 29 games of the season, and the Sabres are going to have to deal with Andrei Vasilevskiy in the net and Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point and everyone John Cooper can throw out on the ice. Victor Hedman probably will be back, I would think, for at least a couple of these games, if not the one next week. A very intimidating club, the Tampa Bay Lightning are, and you say, oh, geez, the Sabres have to play Tampa four times. Well, you know what? I would think the Tampa Bay Lightning a little bit are saying, oh, geez, we got to play the Buffalo Sabres four times too, because they are probably going to have a tremendous amount of curiosity of what it's going to be like playing the Buffalo Sabres this year with the Sabres playing at this level of hockey. I look at this division, and I'm not buying the Detroit Red Wings. I'm sorry to Patrick Kane and his family and that. They're clearly a playoff team. They have the second longest playoff drought in the league. They're going to break it, I think. They're going to make it. I'm not buying them as a candidate to win the Atlantic Division, even though they are second right now. I really think we're looking at the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Buffalo Sabres as the top two teams in this division. And if somebody could sneak out in those four meetings 7 points, that might be enough to tip the scales in their favor. I still think you might be looking at simply 2-2 in those four games. But we'll see how the Sabres match up against the Lightning. You go through the top teams in the league, they've beaten a lot of teams. They went 0-2 against Colorado, but they've played Minnesota very well. They won in Dallas. They won in Edmonton. They beat Edmonton twice, as a matter of fact. They haven't played Vegas yet. They still got two games left with them, but it's interesting to me because the Sabres are 10-3-2 in the Atlantic. They've played very well in the division. We saw how they ran roughshod over the poor Leafs, who are now in last place in the division. That's such a shame. But you're right. What a stretch here, a back-to-back in Florida. And then, you know, Pittsburgh, one of the surprise teams in the entire league. So I really like where the Sabres stand in the Atlantic and where the schedule falls for them.
Right. And you know, one more question before we wrap things up. You know, we got the final stretch before the Olympic break. We've seen the Sabres really just go on a tear since, what, December 9th at Edmonton. Yeah. Is the Olympic break going to be good for this team, or is it going to kind of halt the momentum for this team?
That, well, you know, I was thinking back. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was thinking back to this, Rachel. It's the last time we did this, 2014, 2010. Mm-hmm. It did all 2006. It did almost feel like a different season. Mm-hmm. And the teams that were struggling were really going, oof, this is good. We got a break. We got a break out of here. Let's just kind of get a fresh start and try to get some momentum going. A team like Buffalo really on a roll here. I'm not sure you want to turn this faucet off for 3 weeks and try to restart that momentum. I think that's a tough one. That's a tough ask. And we saw this in previous years, and you'll see it. Boy. There is some scrambly, bad-looking hockey the first week after the Olympic break. You've got the guys who are coming off the Olympics who are both mentally and physically tired because of the level of play they've just been through. You've got guys who have been on a beach for a week. And then these teams can start practicing for about a week. They get sick of practice. I was shocked when I saw that you can practice on the 17th of February. The Sabres could practice for a week before they play a game. Well, that's going to get real old real fast, too. So the first few games after the Olympic break, the quality of hockey is really bad, really scrambly. For a team like the Sabres on a roll, not thinking the Olympic break is a good thing. For a team like the Leafs, they're probably thinking, ugh, get away from everything, everybody, all the Toronto media, and see if we can figure something out here. But everybody's got the same situation. Everybody's got to deal with it. The teams that deal with it better will be the ones that survive and get in the right playoff spots that they should be come April. It's part of navigating your season as a professional this year, is knowing this is coming and how do you handle it.
Well, that wraps it up. We're going to have a final week before the Olympic break. You can follow us on buffalonews.com. Mike, how can people find your work if they want to look you up on social media?
By M. Harrington. I have a lot to say sometimes about items that have nothing to do with hockey, but let's talk it all out because there's more talking going on about this season than there's been in a while. Let's put it that way.
You can find me on social media at Rachel M. Lindsay on Instagram at rlindsayreporter. Again, find all of our coverage of Buffalo Sabres on buffalonews.com. I'm Rachel Lindsay. I cover the Buffalo Sabres, and this is Mike Harrington, our news hockey columnist and sports columnist. So thanks for joining in.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.